Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hey everybody, this is Matthew Soltysiak and you're listening to Not the Same Old Lions podcast. Using my sportscasting background, I speak with a variety of guests and interview key players to gain more insight on what makes this team go. As the Detroit Lions enter a new gritty era, we'll look beyond just the kneecaps when it comes to the analysis. Welcome to another episode. In this episode, we have an assortment of information to analyze. The NFL owners meeting took place in Florida, and coming out of that are some interesting rule changes for the NFL, plus some new information about the release and unveiling of the new jerseys for the Detroit Lions. We'll cover that along with season ticket information too. Let's get to it, Lions fans.
This is Jason Cabena with the Detroit Lions, and you're listening to Not the Same Old Lions podcast.
I'm joined today by James Cook, senior sports writer for the Traverse City Record Eagle. You can also hear him on the Get Around podcast, drops on Monday. James, good to have you here. Owners meeting going on. I mean, there's a lot to talk about at this time of the offseason.
Yeah, for being kind of a dead part of free agency, there's a decent amount going on this year. So good to keep the news coming.
It is. Let's start talking about some of that news with the rule changes. Not always the most interesting, but actually going to be somewhat impactful. I want to start with the hip drop tackles. Those are now going to be removed. They're not allowed anymore. The owners wanted this. The NFLPA actually did not want this. And the owners are saying it's for safety reasons, and I'm all for safety. My concern, though, is I do think it's going to be interesting to see how this gets enforced.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the thing is how do you enforce it? It's kind of the same thing as targeting. You know, everybody can agree that there shouldn't be targeting and that, you know, injuries can occur from that and all that. But then it's a matter of how it's officiated, how it's, you know, if you can use instant replay to see if it actually did qualify as that, or if there was intent, you know, with targeting, if there's intent and stuff. But with this hip drop tackle, it's going to be interesting to see how they interpret it and how the officials interpret it. You know, I mean, it's a brand new rule for them. So, you know, how do they take it? You know, do certain crews call it more or less or not at all? Or, you know, how that goes too. So that's going to add another little scouting element to teams' preparation each week. And when they find out what officiating crew they get and like, okay, well, these guys call that a lot and it's 15 yards. So we got to be mindful of that.
Yeah. I liked one of the other ideas that was put out there was to have officials talk about and educate everybody during the summer camps and the preseason so that we could try to limit them versus going to such a severe thing. Because like you said, if it's a 15 yard penalty, that can be a significant change of momentum in a game. And so it might've been, hey, maybe we take this other step first before going here. But either way, what's done is done. It's been moved. And now the Lions players, all players in the NFL are going to have to adjust to this. And, yeah. You know, again, as one of the players wrote or said, you know, when someone's coming at you, you're not thinking necessarily about certain elements. You're thinking, how can I just tackle this guy? Because it's seconds, if not split seconds, of making the play or not making a play.
Yeah. I mean, it would be the interesting, you know, I mean, the NFL cites injuries and player safety for this. It would be interesting to see their work on this and see what data is there out there that are injuries being caused by this tackle, because just on the surface, just thinking about it, it doesn't seem like an action that would result in a lot of injuries and would maybe make people tackle people in other ways that maybe might be more likely.
So, yeah, you're right. It'll be interesting to see. I think the first glimpse we'll really get will be preseason. Some other changes happened, and the Lions were actually one of the catalysts for some of these changes. One is bringing players back from IR, and I think this applies to the playoffs and having more moves to be able to bring players back.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing to be able to bring more players back, especially in the playoffs when teams are, the attrition occurs during this season and, you're running low. And, you saw during the playoffs this year where the Lions had to sign Zach Ertz during the playoffs because of so many injuries to one position and stuff like that. So having a little bit more flexibility in the playoffs, I think we'll maybe be able to put a better product out there instead of having a team put an offense or defense out there with one glaring hole because they, happen to have a couple of injuries that week to a certain position.
Yeah, I agree. I think just having the extra flexibility to bring players back just makes the game better. Another thing that could make the game better is the extra challenge. If you get one of your first two challenges right, you get a third one. You don't have to get both of them right for a third one. And to me, feels like a no-brainer that this just seems like what should happen. And the Lions proposed it and it was passed. How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, like you said, it feels like a no-brainer. I don't see the downside of this at all. The goal is to get as many right or calls right as possible. So why not let them challenge, one more play? And the amount of times that's actually going to go into effect is not going to be that great. So it's not going to affect the average length of an NFL game or anything. So, let's put a better product out there and get it right.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Try and get the play right, the call right. That's what we want at the end. Another thing that's come about is the trade deadline has been pushed back. Now, it's only going back 1 week from week 8 to 9. I think a lot of teams wanted to push back around week 10, but a 1 week adjustment seems like a logical start. What are some potential side effects of this later trade deadline that you see?
Yeah, and I think you see that a lot of people were hoping that it would be pushed back even farther, multiple weeks past what they did. 1 week is an improvement, but it just seems to be, even in week 9, you're looking at with a 17 game schedule with one bye week, that's halfway through the season. MLB's trade deadline is essentially 1 month before the end of the season. I think teams would like a little bit more flexibility, especially the contenders, to be able to replace some of those players that get injured or fix a hole here and there that you have in your lineup if you think you're a playoff contender. And doing that as late as possible is going to help the teams and also help those teams that are out of the playoffs but maybe have some pieces that they could move and flip for draft picks. So it's also a little bit of a parity issue.
Well, yeah, and I think football, the NFL, is different than, say, the NBA or Major League Baseball, where the impact of a player is. You can make an impact by all means. You can do so. NBA's got 5 guys on the court. Major League Baseball, you don't have 11 guys moving in unison on a play, and it takes time to get up to speed on some of those things. So I do think it's a little different between the leagues. But I also want to point out that by moving the trade deadline later, like you said, it does give more teams that opportunity to maybe sell a part off. But if there's a team that wants to kind of go all in, so to speak, late in the season and get discount prices on some players to try to build that temporary super team, it increases the chance of that. And I think that's one thing we want to be a little wary of. I mean, you saw the Rams when they got, was it Von Miller and OBJ, mid-season. And I guarantee you, if those guys didn't go over there, they're probably not hoisting that Lombardi trophy because those were two big boosts in the season, especially because one of their top receivers tore his ACL just days after that move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think on the other hand, it does give teams a little bit more. I think part of the reason why you don't see many trades at the deadline where it currently is because 8 weeks into the season, nobody's willing to admit that their season's over. and they're out of it. So not many teams are willing to part with players. They still are holding out hope that, oh, we have a shot at the playoffs. And especially when they keep adding more teams to the playoffs, you have a more chance in making the postseason a little bit later in the season. So pushing it back a little bit makes sense if you want there to be this trade deadline frenzy. Otherwise, I just don't think it's going to be there. You're going to see maybe a small handful of trades every year. You know, there was a decent amount this year. But, you know, I think that if they want to make that kind of another event point in the season, it should be a little bit later.
Yeah. And, you know, again, this is another way around the salary cap, if you will, because there's a salary cap that's kind of levels the playing field. Major League Baseball has no salary cap, so they can spend as much money as they want. But if you get a player halfway through the season from another club, maybe they're going to pay half that salary, so it doesn't eat up as much of your salary cap space, so you can bring some higher level talent in late. And so, you know, there's pros and cons to it. I mean, if my team benefits from a move during the trade deadline, then I would be all for it. And if another team does and the Lions aren't, then it's like, oh, you know, so there's pros and cons to it. I can see definitely moving it back a little bit the way they did. And I wouldn't be opposed to them moving it back another week or two with that season being longer. But I wouldn't want to move it back too far just because I worry about that unintended consequence. Mm-hmm. Let's look at Christmas Day. There was a football game this past Christmas Day due to the timing of Christmas. This coming year, there's going to be two games on Christmas Day. And oh, by the way, Christmas lands on a Wednesday. Now, a couple things here. Apparently, it's been said that Wednesday games are not going to become a commonplace thing. This is a one-off year. And what I read is these teams that apparently are going to play on Christmas Day will apparently play like the Saturday beforehand as opposed to the Sunday. So they have the same number of games, days rest between a typical short week if they were to be playing on a Thursday. But that also means there will be games on Sunday, Monday, nothing Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I don't know about Friday, maybe Saturday, yeah, and then Sunday. That's going to be a lot of NFL.
Yeah, 5 days in a row of NFL games.
So I don't think the NBA likes this move, but we know right now the NFL is kind of the leader in professional sports in the country. So we'll see how it goes, but that's going to be a lot of football in a row. And anybody playing fantasy football, I can't even imagine what you're trying to do with lineups and free agency and all that stuff or waiver wires.
Yeah, that's going to be a little bit crazy with that. I hadn't really thought about that, which is weird considering how much I play fantasy football. But I would like it to be where if you're playing in the Wednesday game, then that you have your bye week the week before. So you have a week and a half to prepare for this game. And then you essentially have a week and a half coming out of it. You know, if you play on the following weekend after the weekend, you know, so I that would be the way I think that it would be optimal. Whether they can do that, they probably won't, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I mean, being that it is in late December, most teams are probably done with their bye week. I don't pay attention to when the last bye week happens, but it's got to be getting close to that. Well, let's talk about a really big change, and that's going to be the kickoff is going to change. The kickoff as we know it is gone, and the new kickoff is going to mimic very much the XFL style kickoff, which puts the offensive and defensive blockers like 5 yards apart from each other on like the 40 and 35 yard lines of the receiving team. The kicker kicks the ball off and the blockers cannot move until the ball hits the ground or the return player catches it. What are you thinking?
I like it from a player safety standpoint. It takes away the players having a 40-yard head start and hitting each other, which is the thing that resulted in injuries and I think contributed a lot to CTE over the years was kickoffs. And so it made complete sense in the XFL. The XFL went a whole season without any injuries occurring on kickoffs. It made sense. And again, the XFL proves to be a proving ground for NFL rule changes that we've seen before. So, you know, and I like it. The kickoff is not going to look like it did before, you know, where you have a guy catching the ball on the goal line or in the end zone and then having like about 15 yards of free space to go. It's going to be a little bit more You know, you're not going to see wide receivers and DBs back there returning kicks necessarily anymore. You're going to see your backup running backs doing it, because it's going to be almost, if you looked at the XFL plays, it's a little bit more looks like a play from scrimmage, you know, like there's a line of scrimmage kind of. So I think you're going to want more guys who can break tackles and get yards after contact rather than guys who are just burners.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this change, because the kickoff in recent years has almost become a ceremonial play where no action takes place. And so it brings a play back into play. And like you said, it's going to be very different. The strategy is going to be different. Actually, Coach Campbell talked about it before it actually got passed, and he said he was excited about the potential for it. And it, you know, they're going to be scoping film of the XFL just to try to figure things out. But I don't think they're going to really understand it until they're actually running it themselves. But you're right. The prototypical kick returner might not be what they want anymore, because you're not going at, you know, equal speeds against each other. It's going to be breaking tackles and stuff, almost like a line of scrimmage play, like you said. So it's going to be interesting. They're going to look for that combination of speed and breakability or tackle breakability on this one. And I think it's going to make it a lot more exciting for fans. And again, the big thing is there's the player safety that's taken into account, and that is taken care of along with bringing a play back.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what did you see a day after I think this was announced? One of the player transactions was the Pittsburgh Steelers signing Cordarrelle Patterson to a 2-year fairly, you know, lucrative contract for a guy who's a third string running back. So, you know, I think it could bring it back a little bit more money in the depth of your running back room, where you're going to have to spend a little bit of money if you're going to use that third running back as a kick returner.
And this sets
a good
up,
guy there.
Yeah. And this sets things up really well for the Lions, because we know how much they value special teams. So I'm expecting the Lions to actually be one of the leaders in this, as far as, you know, trying to think outside the box. So they'll see what they've done in the XFL, but you know they're going to try and put some personal wrinkles in there and see what they can do within the rules to, you know, maximize the potential.
Yeah, one of the few touchdowns scored on a kick return in the XFL last year was on a trick play, basically like a reverse. Looked like a reverse, and that's how they ended up getting it. So it doesn't result in touchdowns nearly as much as the old kickoff return or big returns, but it'll still bring back some of that excitement. And I think with the Lions, you know, they signed, I think re-signed Bam Knight kind of with this role in mind for him.
Yeah. Zonovan Knight actually might be perfect for something like this.
Mm-hmm.
So at the owners meeting, Rod Wood, Brad Holmes, Dan Campbell, all shared some info. They shared some insights during this time. One of the things Rod Wood talked about was season tickets. Now, I believe that there were at least 15,000 on the waiting list, if not more. And Rod Wood, I believe, said they had a retention rate of season ticket holders from the previous year at 96%. So even with the raise in prices, 96% kept their season tickets. And it just goes to show the incredible product the Lions put out and the demand going on. And, you know, Rod Wood said that, hey, they were like way undervalued compared to the rest of the league. And I still believe they are around the midway point for ticket prices when compared to other clubs in the NFL.
Yeah, I think, and the same, I think, was with concession prices, too. They were on the lower end of the NFL, you know, which is surprising, because it's football stadium prices. But from what I understand, they were kind of in the lower half of the NFL as far as what their prices were for concessions.
Yeah, if they're on the lower end of the NFL for concession prices, I do not want to visit those stadiums on the upper end, because I can't even fathom that. Because, yeah, those concession prices are they're in a different category altogether.
Yeah, like Lambeau Field is, I think, $18 for a tall boy of Miller High Life.
Wow. Yeah. So the good news is, I guess, is Lions fans are going to be packing that stadium again this year and make it another home field advantage. So we'll just have to kind of wait and see how that comes out and see what's available when individual games get released, which I don't think happens till after the schedule's actually announced, which that's a little ways away. But another thing that is getting announced, the NFL jerseys, the Detroit Lions are going to be getting new jerseys. And we speculated this was going to happen. People thought last year, and then, you know, a big email went out to season ticket holders that they were running a big sale at Ford Field through April 15th for, I don't know if it's 25 or 50% off all current jerseys. So people are like, ooh, we think it's going to happen. Well, it's been announced they're going to unveil their new jerseys before the NFL draft, which starts on April 25th in Detroit. So I would expect sometime between April 15th and the 25th, that 10-day span makes sense. That's probably when they're going to make the announcement, which is not very far away.
Yeah, and it seems like a perfect time for them to do it, you know, because you're going to have thousands and thousands of Lions fans and other NFL fans in town when you unveil these new jerseys, and people who are obviously big time fans. If you're going to the draft, you're a pretty big time NFL fan. So that seems like a perfect marketing opportunity to sell that first wave of jerseys.
Well, and I remember, you know, people are talking about the jersey bump. You know, there's the Madden curse, there's the jersey bump. I remember, I believe it was Denver and Tampa, the year they both got new jerseys, and people in Denver weren't too thrilled about those new jerseys at first. I think both teams started 5-0 that year. And so there is that little jersey bump. Oh, and I believe the Broncos are getting new jerseys this year too. But hey, if we can get a little jersey bump, I'll take that.
Hey, any bump you can get.
So, James, with the new jerseys, I mean, we don't know what they're going to look like. If you had any say in the matter, what would you like to see as a difference, or what would you like to see from the Lions jerseys?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like some of the alternate jerseys that they've had in the last few years have been really pretty sweet, you know, and I kind of like keeping those as the alternate jerseys and having what they have. So I'm not dead set on any particular style or anything like that. I'm kind of interested to see what they come out with, if it'll be something more like the previous alternates or something completely different. You know, they have released shirts already that they'll be selling at the draft that are kind of a little bit different logo. I think, you know, with the Lions logo, where it kind of looks like it's raised, you know, because it's got another set of colors behind it. But I don't think those are usually tied in to actual team designs. The ones that they release at the draft, they're usually a little special one that they just do something as a one-off. So I wouldn't read too much into that, but it'll be interesting to see. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that are clamoring for them to add more black to the color scheme. You know, there's the old throwbacks that are just the solid blue and the solid silver, you know, and all that stuff. But I doubt they go there either.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. There are people asking for the black. Honolulu blue and silver, those are the colors that I'm a big fan of. So I'm hoping that those stay the main themes, but we shall see. And apparently we don't have to wait that much longer. Well, let's turn over to some other things. The Lions are looking to hold joint practices with the New York Giants again. And the joint practice seems to be a thing to stay here. And it seems to be way more beneficial than even the preseason games because of all the controlled things they can do. And they do it with other teams versus just against their own players. They're talking maybe in New Jersey this time. I believe they had them in Detroit before. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. But that information will be coming out here shortly as well.
Yeah. The joint practices are a thing that's not going to go away. I mean, we've even been seeing it filter down to the high school level, where high school teams are doing the doing those joint practices against other teams, and you know, the coaches just seem to like it because they can work on particular things. They can game plan. They can, you know, try things and do a lot of different stuff that they can't in maybe a normal preseason game.
Now, another update that came out, and I believe it was Brad Holmes, he gave more information, or maybe it was Rod Wood, they gave more information about Cam Sutton. You know, as we know, Cam Sutton has been released. The Lions shed a little bit more light on that during the owners' meeting, saying it has been reported that Sutton was in the Lions facility at the time they learned about the warrant. It's also reported that the Lions spoke with Sutton. He then left the facility and then was released the next day. As for the non-football side of the situation, we hope for the best overall resolution possible for all parties involved. And of course, we're going to wait and see how things play out and not speculate. Now, turning over to the football aspect of it and how this release affects the Detroit Lions, well, it could change their secondary quite suddenly. I think most people think it does. Now, the Lions had already traded for Carlton Davis III, and he was already being penciled in as CB1. And the Lions signed Amik Robertson from Oakland, who many were envisioning as their likely CB3. So then the Lions were still in need of some more depth and whatnot, but with Sutton gone, it potentially opens up a big need at CB2. Now, that's a role Robertson could potentially fill, and if you ask him, it sounds like he's ready for that task. But many think the Lions might want more depth and or competition at the top. What's some of your insight on that, James?
Yeah, well, by releasing him, I think they save $1.5 million immediately. They're going to try to get the NFL to void the contract entirely, which would allow them to recoup the entire value on the salary cap end of it. And then it also would maybe allow them to go after some of the signing bonus money from Cam Sutton as well. So that's the money part of it. It's interesting as far as what they decide to do. Brad Holmes also recently was, quoted as saying that cornerback is not a need because of the Cam Sutton thing, which is interesting and a little bit contradictory to what we've heard, Dan Campbell say. But, there's other options out there too. There's Stephon Gilmore, who's still a free agent. His brother's on the team. We've talked about him before. Supposedly his asking price is about 10 years for one, or $10 million for a 1 year contract. I'm going to guess the Lions don't want to pay that much, and they're trying to, and that may be a smokescreen by Holmes to get that price to come down. One other interesting offer or option is Marshon Lattimore, who, his team is looking to move on from him. He's not a cheap player necessarily, but they could maybe take some of that contract on in trading him. The asking price is supposedly a fifth round pick, but the timing of that trade would be a post June 1st thing. So it would be something that would have to happen after June 1st. So if the Lions maybe have an agreement in place for that trade to happen, trade a fifth round pick next year for a starting corner who's, still right in that Carlton Davis, maybe even better stratosphere there of corners, then maybe that's why Holmes is saying we don't have any need necessarily for a corner. Or it could just be a smokescreen for the draft, and not letting teams know that he was looking to take a corner at number 29 and try to leapfrog ahead of him.
Yeah, there's a lot to look at there. You're exactly right on a lot of those different elements. I mean, right now, the other defensive backs on the roster, which I didn't mention yet, is Brian Branch, who plays more nickel, and he could be potential safety help. And we have Emmanuel Mosley, who's coming back from injury. We have Stephen Gilmore. We have Khalil Dorsey and Craig James. Now, the guys left unsigned are Kendall Vildor, Jerry Jacobs, who got released, and Will Harris. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens with this. I think Branch is more likely going to stay in the nickel and could go to safety help. I think the Lattimore move is one that you really could see play an issue or be a factor, because like you said, it wouldn't be till after that June 1st thing. So There's still guys to sign in free agency. There is the draft, and we're going to get into the draft and see how things affect the draft positions once all the dust settles. But we do know the Lions need to sign a couple more defensive backs, whether it's someone's going to start or fight for the starting spot or someone to be more of a depth spot, that remains to be seen. But the other area in the secondary that still needs some addressing is the safety position. Now, if Fatu Melifadwu and Kirby Joseph, the two starters, are back, we know Tracy Walker got released and CJ Gardner-Johnson is gone. I think I said Jerry Jacobs got released, but I believe he just was a free agent that didn't get re-signed.
The Lions didn't offer him the restricted free agent tender.
Agent. So the Lions need some more depth at safety. They've got Brandon Joseph there. And again, I'm expecting Brian Branch to play a little bit more. I think Dan Campbell talked about that, about him doing so much nickel, but they see him being able to go back and forth the way CJ Gardner-Johnson could. And in his second season, you might see him get more reps at the safety position, but they're going to sign another safety. It's just, the question is, or draft one. The question, I guess, is what level? Are you looking for a veteran who can come in and provide more leadership and maybe rotate through the starting lineup? Or is it going to be someone that is a depth piece that you think could fill in, just maybe not as a fighting for the starting spot right away?
Yeah, and you could see both. You could see a veteran safety brought in for sure depth, and then a young guy drafted in the middle or late rounds to develop, you know, and Holmes has done that kind of repeatedly over the last couple of years, where he's signed a veteran at a position that he's drafted to give himself a little bit of, you know, cover in case that rookie's not ready to come in and produce right away, just like Brian Branch, and then signing basically his NFL clone in CJ Gardner-Johnson.
Now, another player of interest is wide receiver Josh Reynolds. Now, he visited Baltimore, but he left there without a contract. And the Lions said they were still interested in bringing him back. They were still in communication with him. And so I think a lot of fans were hoping, I mean, at 6'3", that's great depth, great height for a depth receiver. But it looks like Josh Reynolds will not be coming back to the Detroit Lions. He has signed a contract, or is signing a contract, with the Denver Broncos. It's a 2-year deal worth up to $14 million. That is according to Adam Schefter. So it looks like that is not going to be an option for the Lions at the wide receiver position, which means they will likely draft somebody or bring somebody else in to add to the wide receiver room.
Yeah, I think you're right that it's just a certain price point that Holmes, you know, doesn't want to pay over a certain amount for a guy who's essentially at best the third receiver.
Donovan Peoples-Jones coming back. He's a taller guy as well. The only other guy that's really tall in there is Antoine Green, the late round draft pick from last year, who didn't see a whole lot of game action. So we do know that's something else they value as well. James, any final thoughts, anything you want to touch base on before we wrap things up and get out of here?
Oh, I'm just looking forward to the draft. You know, the message boards that I go to, everybody's just clamoring for more free agency signings and everything like that. And I'm like, I don't know that that's really going to happen anytime soon, other than maybe, you know, re-signing, you know, some of these, you know, cheap veterans, or re-signing some of your guys, like, you know, like a Khalil Dorsey, how they re-signed him the other day, stuff like that. So I don't know, there's going to be a whole lot of movement in free agency between now and the draft. Although, you know, sometimes you do see guys signed like just a day or two before the draft as an emergency backup to fill a spot, to create a smokescreen that you don't need that position anymore, that kind of stuff. But up until then, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of movement.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I feel like most of the movement's been happened. You'll see a few things maybe here and there. And we're gonna you know, do a little bit more of how the free agency market settles and how that impacts the draft on our next episode. And we also have a little nugget we're going to drop from Brad Holmes on that next one as well. So you want to make sure you tune in for that. James, as always, thanks for being here and talking Lions. It's always a pleasure and an honor.
Well, thank you, man.
Folks, that's a quick look at the happenings around the Lions right now and some of the stuff happening in the NFL that's going to impact the Lions. Again, expect some pre-draft coverage coming up in the next week or so. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can find more episodes and content at notthesameoldlions.com. If you're listening on YouTube, please hit that like button. And while you're at it, tell your friends about the show and please subscribe regardless of your listening platform. Until next time, stay gritty, my friends.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.